India is pushing for 1 billion transactions a day on UPI.
UPI as alternatives to credit cards. Did you ever think that was even a discussion to be had?
Credit cards by themselves is a huge discussion to be had. And you guys get it in like the next 10 minutes.
Absolutely. Digital gold is another topic that we've covered. Payments, payment processors, rewards on your payments, startup funding for free by the government.
And how are these credit card companies making money?
Everything like that and a whole lot more coming up right after this.
As a startup, everything has to happen fast.
When you listen to these financial moguls, the people who've really made it, they are like, the first thing you do is cut your credit card, burn it.
Fint is revolutionizing the way people get rewarded while spending on UPI. A large part of India isn't on credit cards. And so they miss out on these exciting things that, you know, brands have to give them.
The ideas are around a dime a dozen. It is who executes the idea best.
I was in Singapore a couple of days ago, right? And I've actually used PhonePe there.
Give us three ways in which you've studied customer behavior and how that has impacted the way you've developed Fint.
Primarily, you know, Fint is... Hey everyone, this is Abadur Rehman Siddiqui, co-founder and CEO of Fint. Fint is revolutionizing the way people get rewarded while spending on UPI. A large part of India isn't on credit cards. And so they miss out on these exciting deals that, you know, brands have to give them. And we try to figure out, you know, how do we get the tier 2, tier 3 cities to be a part of these extremely huge, you know, online celebrations of you know, cashbacks and rewards and all of this. And we tried to figure that out. We tried to make an inclusive application for a larger part of India and a larger, you know, set of people in terms of, you know, demographics and age. That is what we are building. We are building Fint, which is, you know, a platform that allows people to get rewarded for every transaction that they make in the, you know, format of digital gold. So not in terms of cashback and all of that. In digital gold, you know, the idea is basically to create a spend investing application where people are spending and at the same time the money is being invested into probably, you know, an asset. So that's it. Initially, that's how we started out was digital gold.
Isn't there another application like this in the US, which is, it's called Apricot, I think. Is it?
Yeah, they're Apricot, not exactly. India also has this standard application called CS. There's Hubble Money as well, right? Which kind of rewards you on when you're spending money. We are primarily looking at, you know, rewarding people when they're spending money on by doing, you know, UPI transactions. Number one is India is pushing for 1 billion transactions a day on UPI by 2025, 2027. And you know, it's a huge market opportunity, and there are a lot of people who are left out in terms of being rewarded. You know, in the structure of, you know, credit card. So a country like probably Singapore, where everybody has a credit card, India doesn't have, you know, that population, which all of them would have a credit card. And, you know, with the advent of UPI, that kind of also looks very bleak now. So, you know, for countries like other countries had to get on credit cards to, you know, make it more convenient for other things like traveling in metro and all of this, right? But India now has launched UPI, and that kind of looks a little difficult to get everybody on a credit card instrument when you have a payment mechanism which is as effective as, you know, UPI.
I think effective, secure, easily accessible. I think the way that they've gone about implementing it so far, apart from like once or twice when the bank has been like, oh yeah, you know, we're having problems processing this or something like that, it's been very, very smooth sailing.
So just to, you know, add to, you know, when you're saying secure and all of this, just to add to this is, you know, I was in Singapore a couple of days ago, right? And I've actually used PhonePe there. So I tried it out in 10 stores, roughly in 10 stores, 10 transactions, and 3 of them got through. Basically, Singapore has this SGQR or Nets QR. You scan it via the Bheem app or PhonePe, and it kind of, you know, does the same thing as it does in India. It actually, the Forex exchange of UPI is pretty lower than a debit card. So a debit card was charging me around 3.45%, whereas, you know, PhonePe was charging me, I think, or my bank was charging me 2.95%. And, you know, these are transactions that I've gone through. I tried it in 10 stores and, you know, I successfully recorded myself, you know, doing this transaction as well. So there is a lot of scope in UPI in terms of cross-border payments also, because it's fairly new. And, you know, it is easy. And I'll tell you a story of why this happened in the first place is because I lost my cards in Singapore. So now I have to figure out a way to kind of make payments. In Singapore, you can actually buy a prepaid card from a 7-Eleven store and load that card with money. And, you know, keep making payments with it. So I was doing that. And I was also trying, you know, whether the UPI kind of works, because Singapore is one country that we've been told that a UPI would work. So, you know, there is a lot of scope in terms of the in and abouts of UPI. And that is where we're looking at, you know, building for consumers. And primarily, all startups are kind of shifting to, you know, a B2B model where, you know, they see a lot of growth, a lot of profits in the B2B model. And me and my co-founder always have the discussion that if everybody is going to B2C, B2B, who's going to be B2C? And this is very difficult. You know, a consumer-facing application at this point in juncture in time is something people are, you know, kind of running away. And even if they started just stopping it and, you know, kind of moving into a more B2B model, which will kind of make them money. I think there is still a lot of scope in B2C, which a lot of people tend to, you know, kind of overlook and not, you know, figure out that, you know, consumers need something new, right?
I think the biggest issue is that B2B seems easier because businesses tend to understand other businesses' value proposition. It's easier to get businesses to pay you money if your product is good. However, when you're looking at when you're looking at individual customers and you're saying, okay, I'm going to provide directly to a customer, your size per order comes down. So, you know, there's like a couple of ways to make money. Either is that you reach more people or you increase the value per person. With B2B, what's happening is you're increasing the value per person, but you're reaching lesser people. But those people who you're reaching understand what you're giving them. Whereas with a consumer, you sort of have to convince them a lot more. And I think a lot of people just think that it's, I am in that boat where I'm just like, you know, it's too hard to convince every single person. I'd rather approach businesses because they seem to understand me better.
So initially when we were launching, we were very skeptical about, you know, what would the numbers look like and, you know, how would we fare? You know, we were thinking like, you know, we would do 1 lakh rupees in revenue for the first month and 2 lakhs starting next month. The first month we are at about 20 lakhs. The next month we're about 70 lakhs. So that kind of showed that the consumers want a product, you know. Maybe Paytm can sell digital gold. And, you know, venture capitalists have this equation that they put out always to you, you know, oh, maybe, you know, Paytm can do this. Why not? Anybody can do anything in a fintech situation. It's not, you know, I'm not running an innovative patented mechanism in a finance institution. That's not possible. We are heavily regulated in terms of what we can do, right? There are regulations in place. There are our guidelines and there are boundaries. So we can't get highly innovative and start doing things, you know, apart from the regulations.
You've spoken about two things. One is when I'm conducting a transaction, that transaction, a portion of it should be set aside and I should own gold for that transaction. That is one part of your discussion. The other part of your discussion is that UPI is a debit mechanism where there is money sitting in your bank, which you're accessing. Instead of that, UPI could also be used as a credit mechanism where I will pre-approve you or I will tell you in advance that, hey man, I'll give you 50,000 rupee loan today and then you can use it and at the end of the month, pay it back to me, which is basically what a credit card is. It's a loan which you pay back at the end of the month.
Correct.
Cool. Every fiber of my being is against credit cards because when you listen to these financial moguls, the people who've really made it, they are like, the first thing you do is cut your credit card, burn it. Change me. Change my mindset on why credit cards, other than just the aspect of I can cancel one of my transactions easier than a debit transaction. Why a credit card? Or why UPI-based credit?
So, you know, for a country which is aspirational, if I'm looking at, you know, dynamics of India and saying in terms only of India, and not taking, you know, the world as, you know, this, we are looking at a very aspirational country in terms of, you know, how they're spending and what they need, right? For somebody sitting in a different country, a washing machine is a normal thing. For an Indian, it's a luxury item. And, you know, when you have to create access to that luxury item, you have to insert some sort of credit into the system, right? For them to be able to access it, because the pay which India has as right now and standards of, you know, how people live and the quality of life, that it's subpar. Let's kind of all agree to it that it's subpar. It's not at par with other South Asian countries as well. Let's leave, you know, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka and Pakistan out of the equation for the matter. So a country like maybe Thailand, you know, Malaysia, or other countries in Southeast Asia, if you look at them, you know, they are using more technology in their lives. Their pay is better, per hour pay is better. You don't have, you know, the kind of labor that we have. So obviously you will not find maid because nobody can afford a maid, right? Or, you know, it's an affordable. And we are, you know, kind of spoiled with that kind of luxury. So by the time that we reach that certain level, which is going to be, you know, 30, 40 years later, it's still, you know, a mechanism where India has to be pumping with credit, whether it's via UPI or, you know, and it's for an aspirational aspect. You know, if America or other countries have, you know, reached that particular aspect, they have been pumped in by credit. It has nothing to do with, you know, everybody becoming wealthy just by having their own money.
Dude, we read this every time. We read this everywhere, every time, that America's debt ceiling and America's credit card debt is so high. America has such high debt.
No. But they are, again, two separate conversations, right? One is I take credit in or I take debt in order to produce business. The other is I take debt in order to consume. So when you talk about credit card, a credit card is for consumption primarily. You are asking me to consume more given my low income. And that is a very big death trap for a lot of people, because they'll be like, my salary is 20,000 rupees, but credit card is allowing me another 20,000 rupees. Why don't I consume 40,000 today and then I can pay it back sometime in the future, hoping that I'll make more. But then at the end of the day, I'll have to keep taking more and more and more and more credit in order to actually, you know, supplement my life, which now I have built to be a 40,000 rupee life. What's your thought on this? Like, I know you're in the credit card business, right? So you are the one who has to...
No. We're not primarily on the credit card business. We are not in that. We had a discussion on that. I don't want to cut you through. We are actually the ones who are giving rewards on not a credit card, on all UPI transactions, which are debit transactions. But given the fact when we were having a discussion on, you know, on credit, is when I said, you know... One thing could be, you know, to lower the kind of interest that we see in terms of, you know, credit transaction as well. So something like a Bajaj EMI or a Bajaj Finserv is really popular in India per se, because of their aspect of, you know, being zero cost. Although they were making money out of the brand, which they give them a cut, but to the user, it kind of doesn't reflect on that. So then there are multiple aspects and regulations that India still is way far behind, you know. Let's just talk about MRP for a moment. MRP is something that, you know, was pretty regulated when there was no GST, right? Now it's not regulated, because I can mark something up at 4,000 and then sell it at 50% or 60% discount and yet be only liable to pay the GST on the discounted amount. Whereas when VAT was there, I couldn't do something like that. So, you know, India is revolving around, you know, a lot of regulation in terms of, you know, what could be, and we just were tip of, you know, figuring out our regulations. We're still not there, and I think a lot of regulations will define how India goes ahead. And as you say that the debt trap is for a particular person, a lot of other people may be using it for their advantage. They are financially more, you know, aware of what they're doing. See, the idea is you were aware of this is happening to you. Half of India isn't aware, and the primary factor of that is only 27% of India is financially literate. You look at a literacy marker of above 80%, right? And a financial literacy marker of only 27%. That kind of shows how denied India's financial literacy is. You know, there are apps like FamPay, the apps like Junio that are coming up for children, you know, pocket money apps, basically for children, so that children get to know about financial literacy more earlier than this. You were kicked out of home when you were in the US, and when you turn 18, you're out of home, you start working, you have a more financial awareness of you know, how things work, utility bills, and all this. For us, till we are out of college, our parents are still treating us like princesses or, you know, prince. Maybe get that factor. And that's where the divide is. That is where, you know, there is a delayed financial understanding. And that is where people get into the debt. So we also thought, you know, how could we make India more financially aware of, you know, and we started a small section on our application called financial literacy. We've not done that completely, but we're looking at, you know, how do we give out bite-sized information to people to make them financially aware that, you know, instruments like how to use instruments like credit card, mortgage, home loan. And you've seen the great, you know, showdown between the government and the finfluencers. So you know, in terms of what kind of advice they're giving out to people. So we wanted to give out the right kind of advice to people and, you know, maybe not advice, maybe put our information in front of them and let them decide. And I think, you know, you are aware of the debt trap, right? And a lot of people are not aware of the debt trap because of financial literacy. So we can do it the other way around. Rather than stop giving them credit, let them make them more aware of the credit, right? And make them more aware of what's going to happen if this is going to go wrong, you are going to go down the road. So I think that's a better way to, you know, kind of approach the consumer.
So to clarify, you're not saying everyone should go out and get a credit card. You're saying for the people who are educating themselves enough to get a credit card, we wish to provide a better option for them.
Okay.
Maybe a cheaper, maybe a more refined as per the international standards. Yes?
I think what I've understood is the opposite. I think he's saying that cut out the credit cards. I think he was talking about the fact that India isn't ever going to get the credit card penetration that other countries have because of services like UPI. And he's trying to make UPI payments as reward-based as credit card payments are. Like, you know, today there's the credit cards would be like, oh yeah, you know, spend say 10,000 rupees a month and get 2,000 rupees of free cash back or like something like that.
We've figured out an alternative method to do it, right? So rather than paying on Zomato directly, you come on the application, you buy the exact amount of gift card. So let's say, for example, your bill was 523. I'll give you a 523 rupee gift card for Zomato. So you purchase it, right? And the cashback is rewarded in the form of digital gold. So I'll tell you why we're doing all these mechanisms at once. So now you get the 523 rupee gift card of Zomato, the transaction you've done via UPI. So you hit that amount in Zomato and you make the purchase to Zomato. It's to you, right? And you got a 7.5% cashback as digital gold. Now we've hedged it against digital gold because a lot of people leave their money in such wallets or in such redeemable points, which they forget to redeem and it expires. So the user error, the reason why people give you reward points is because they want it to expire, not because they wanted to use it. So we do not want to give them an intangible value like a Fint coin, right? Or a credit coin, which has no intangible value, right? We wanted to give them some tangible value. So we hedged it against digital gold as to even if you forget, and you come back 3 years down the line, your money's still there. It might have even grown.
So the digital gold goes to my DMAT account?
No. It's basically digital gold isn't such highly regulated in India. So digital gold is in your wallet with me as well. I cannot sell it off because you're the only one who can sell it off. Our digital gold is, you know, primarily the three players. Augmont is one of them that provides us the facility. And we take digital gold. And once you reach, say 1 gram of gold, you can get that gold physically delivered to your house. So you get there is a order placement where you can do on the application, and the physical gold gets delivered to you. So the idea is basically credit card penetration will not be as effective in India because of the UPI transactions.
So just to make sure I've understood this correctly, today if I'm placing a 100 rupee order on Zomato, I have to, instead of paying directly on Zomato, I go to Fint and I purchase a 100 rupee gift card for Zomato on Fint using UPI. Then I go back to Zomato and use that gift card to pay my Zomato bill.
Or alternatively, you can buy a 5,000 rupee gift card and keep it loaded on your Zomato. Whenever you need to make a purchase, you immediately tap and the purchase is made. So, you know, the customer flow, if you do it every time again and again, is a little hassle, sir. But if you do it once, like say, for example, you're looking at your Zomato monthly bills are at 5,000 rupees. Let's load 5,000 rupees in Zomato. Let it be there and let's take the cash back what we're getting from, you know, Fin to us. And mind you, the discounts on Zomato, you will still get them. So this is on top of everything that you're going to get.
I think the near future of it will be that Zomato will have a pay via Fint option. And then when you will pay via Fint, you will just keep gathering it in the Fint app itself, right? So that would be the near future that you would see. You'll just be the transactional partners.
That would be ideal.
We are actually looking at, you know, kind of integrating these aspects. So we, in fact, Zomato is one of them who have actually given us the button where, you know, exactly after the purchase, you can click and you can directly go to Zomato and Zomato will just pop up. So you don't have to, you know, kind of toggle between your applications and go find Zomato. So you just click there and Zomato will pop up.
So Abadur, the next issue that I would have is that credit cards make money on a spread and credit cards make money on a delayed gratification of someone actually defaulting. Like we discussed earlier, today I make 20,000 rupees. I spent 20,000 rupees. I have a credit card which also has 20,000 rupees limit on it. I spend that today. I owe it sometime in the future, right? And I am very diligent, so I keep paying off my debt on time. And one day will come when I will not. And I will not hit my grace period. I will not hit my grace period and you'll start charging me interest. And the interests are like crazy amounts, like 21%, 23%, 25%, 43%. Irrational interest, right? So I make money there. Hence, I give you the rewards today. Hence, I tell you, hey, use my credit card. It's free. You don't have to pay any interest to me for the month. And you know what? Take airplane points, take miles, take discounts. Go, you use it on Swiggy. I'll give you like 13% off or whatever, right? In the hope that a day will come when you default. There is no defaulting in your case.
Exactly.
How do you make money?
So we make money. We figure out a smart way to make money. So whenever these brands give you gift cards, right? They give you one a discount. So let's say, for example, the Zomato discounts that come to me is 10%. I give the user to 7.5% and I keep 2.5% to myself. The idea is, if somebody purchases a 5,000 rupees Zomato gift card, they are hooked to Zomato and that's a prepayment made to Zomato, right? So their numbers keep growing. So if you look at the Starbucks case, whereas, you know, load the Starbucks, they have so much cash in the Starbucks card only. So it's a similar mechanism that brands do to kind of increase their revenue and they give off percentage of, you know, the value, say 5%, 2%, 3%, it varies. Some are giving 13%. So it kind of varies to what amounts a brand is giving out in terms of, you know, purchase of gift cards. So we make money there. And when the amount gets converted into digital gold, right, we make a commission on digital gold as well. So there are two places where we're making money currently. See, and I will not shy away from the fact that lending is a big part of fintech. If a company cannot get into lending, you know, and I'm not going to be saying I'm dirt clean and it's not going to happen in the future. It is going to happen in the future. Because if there is, you know, investor money being punted, you know, their sole objective is to make money out of, you know, what they're investing in you. And we will in the future, you know, near future have to get down to lending. But we have not thought about it. We want to build a consumer-facing app which the consumers really, you know, enjoy using and they get rewarded for using it as well. Not in terms of, you know, rewards which are intangible, rewards which are tangible.
So basically where your value is being created is through the value that you're creating for a brand like Zomato, where you're saying that I am going to get X number of customers put in Y value of money into you without actually having purchased that Y value of goods from you today. So you're saying if I buy a 1,000 rupee prepaid card and I use it over the next 1.5 months, Zomato is getting that 1,000 rupees today rather than over the next month.
Great. So I'll just give you a small quick insight is what they look at is redemption rates. So let's say, for example, an 80% redemption rate in that same month means they got a 20% extra in that month, which was not redeemed. So that's money in the bank for them. So just to give you a small insight, and why do they discount it to users, you know, or to people like us, and give it us in upfront?
Yeah, the simplest kind of mathematics is that if they have 100 extra rupees today, and they take it and put it in an FD, they have 7 extra rupees at the end of the year, right? So if the more money they can get today, the more money they can put back into Zomato, and whatever the return they generate on Zomato, they can generate that extra. So for them, the extra money that they're getting from Fint is worth 2.5% extra. That's what they are, you know, basing it off of.
They're giving me 10%.
It's actually worth 10% extra.
No, 10% to him, and then 7.5% is being passed on to the consumer, right? In terms of gold.
So he is passing on the 7.5% to the customer. The value to him is 2.5%, but the value to Zomato is 10%.
Yeah, sure. If that's the way you want to go about it. Sure, I was just focused on the Fint value. But then the problem occurs that when you say process via Fint, then the prepaid cards become lesser and lesser established. For example, when you take the Starbucks example, why Starbucks works, and you know there's a full video of Starbucks, why it works is on their application, on the Starbucks app in the US, whenever you want to purchase via the app and get the rewards, you need to load the app first and then conduct a transaction using the points you have on the app. You can't just go and pay via credit card. So people just keep loading the Starbucks app, right? When I have the option to UPI via Fint, and then Fint is still supposed to give me all of that, then the early gratification goes away. I don't have an incentive to preload my Zomato gift card. So how will you dodge that kind of a problem?
One is understanding customer behavior. When the customer understands, you know, I'm going to use it in the future, is when the customer is going to preload it. So we're looking at, you know, trying to also understand what the customer behavior is currently. Initially, a lot of people, when we looked at and we saw a lot of people were doing, you know, transactions, and then they started buying bigger amounts. And, you know, they were doing smaller amounts of transactions, which were, you know, haphazard amounts like 511. So we were like, you know, they're making a particular payment. And then they started buying 10,000 rupees because they kind of knew that, you know, we're going to use that 10,000 is going forward in these couple of weeks or, you know, a week's time. And it is easier to make that purchase. Right? So once it's...
Give us 3 ways in which you've studied customer behavior and how that has impacted the way you've developed Fint.
Primarily, you know, Fint is developed around customers. We were trying to launch it as something completely different. We were trying to launch it as prepaid cards. And then we thought of, you know, how do we reward customers? We did a lot of customer interview and thought, you know, there was no rewarding when you were doing transactions in UPI. Google Pay used to do it in this longer period of time that they did it and then stopped it just to onboard users. But now what we understood when we were, you know, initially starting out was consumers were, you know, looking at, number one, the key element that they were looking at was customer support. Why? Because any money in a gift card is as good as cash. Let's face it, right? If it's lost, it's lost. And they want an immediate resolution. If there is no immediate resolution, you're going to get full board abused on the Play Store. So we thought, you know, that was number one thing that we had to look at. That's why we have a WhatsApp customer support that immediately kind of tends to you and, you know, you have that feeling, okay, this will be resolved. Even if it isn't resolved instantly, right? It still gives a feeling to the user that it's going to be rewarded. It's going to be, you know, resolved. So we looked at number one, that is customer support. That was very important in a situation like this. Number two, the customer behavior that we understood was that, you know, customers were buying random amounts, but they were getting hooked to it. And they get hooked to it. And I'm saying this with numbers because more than 70% of people come back and make purchases. And they don't stop at making purchases. So customers are hooked to it. They were doing, you know, random amount numbers and they started doing, you know, large numbers, you know, 10,000, 5,000, making us look at, you know, probably see that they're doing transactions, multiple transactions, and they're keeping it loaded in their, you know, Zomato wallet or Amazon Pay wallet or Amazon Shopping wallet. So they keep loading the money there and they're using it over a period of time. They just want to do one transaction here and then keep doing multiple transactions over there, right? And that also kind of also is a good thing because you do only one UPI transaction, right? And that kind of results into multiple transactions that you do on their application or not in your bank account. So that's also what people also like, you know, they want to do multiple transactions in a different account altogether and not do it together. Number three thing was, you know, customers were kind of getting hooked to digital gold. So they wanted to buy digital gold. So we thought, you know, why don't offer digital gold, which they can actually buy. They're rewarded in digital gold, right? And you can actually also buy digital gold on the platform, like you can buy on Jar. So you don't have to go to per se Jar to do a digital gold investment. You can still go on Fint, right? And still buy more digital gold. Let's say, for example, you're getting awarded 1,000 rupees worth of digital gold. You want to, you know, probably invest 2,000 rupees more in it, right? On that same wallet, you can add 2,000 rupees more of digital gold and make that purchase. So to give them the full board experience in terms of, you know, getting rewarded in digital gold, you can also invest in digital gold. And these are the key learnings that we have, you know, kind of taken from consumers that have been, and these are very low numbers in terms of consumers. We have about 1,000 active users as of now, and we're not expanding as much right now because we don't have a referral program. Most of it is organic, and we want it to be organic currently because we want it to grow and then probably see, you know, how can we grow it in a way that it's more sustainable over a period of time.
Well, I was just getting back to that point where you said that people are happier making that one UPI transaction than making those singular ones, that if that reflects on their bank statement. It's a similar logic again to using credit cards, where you're like, you know, I'm going to use my credit card for 5 payments and then make that payment in one shot. So on my bank account, it says I have used, say, 2,000 rupees when I have actually made 5 transactions of 400 rupees at separate places.
But then when we talk about credit cards, you're looking at more of urban India. We kind of, you know, we think the world is like the ones that we stay in. And, you know, once we start looking at tier 2, tier 3 cities and how they are leveraging technology. And most of, one more customer insight is, most of our customers actually don't come from urban sectors. So they're mostly from tier 2 and tier 3 cities. They are basically, you know, first generation that kind of is using technology to their leverage. So they're making bill payments via this. And their fathers were actually making bill payments using their older mechanism, getting into a line. So for India, it's a long road right now. It's not going to be happening in like the next couple of years that you're going to get star spanklingly, you know, the last mile is going to get covered in a couple of years. It's steps towards, you know, reaching the last mile of, you know, making villages more technology enabled and all of that. So when we looked at, you know, this is what we want to do. And this is a good way to get users to our application. We can give them several other, you know, all financial products start giving you several other products as well, right? We can give users a ton of products, right? Financial products. But this is a good way to, you know, onboard users, not spending too much money, especially seeing the current scenario of, you know, funding across the globe, where you are looking at, you know, not burning money the investor is giving you. So we thought, you know, how do we onboard more customers not burning too much money?
Considering that your rewards are based on digital gold, I have two questions. Both are very interlinked. One of them is, why not another kind of asset class? Maybe an ETF, maybe the market, maybe XYZ. There are many asset classes. Sign up with a mutual fund and give them a mutual fund and send it to their DMAT account? Or would you like to place it within your wallet and there is a certain aspect to that? That's one question. The other question is, why digital gold and not a gold ETF? Because gold ETFs are better regulated, are better protected, are backed by gold reserves, which are kept in different places in the world, right? So why the two aspects?
So number one, digital gold is also kept as a reserve. So the partner that provides us actually reserves the digital gold. That's not to clear your, you know, gold ETFs. I would, you know, point out to a couple of things here. Right. As a startup, everything has to happen fast. We have to build it fast. We have to integrate fast. We have to launch fast. We have to understand fast. And you know, we don't have that kind of time in hand to, you know, kind of build. We can, you know, launch the product, see how it's working, and their build on. So digital gold was, in fact, the easiest to integrate. I'm being damn honest. That was the easiest to integrate. We've also looked at, we've talked, you know, what others can we get on board and how can we change the game. But just to understand whether the consumers would actually be wanting something like this, rather than, you know, breaking our banks and then seeing the product is completely failed, and then, you know, completely changing our product. I think this was a better route to take. And personally, I think entrepreneur, being an entrepreneur, and I think I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm not doing something, you know, crazy different. I could call myself a businessman, right? And till the time I think I've done something entrepreneurial, I will still call myself a businessman. As a business, I think, you know, you have to understand you can't break the bank in trying to experiment. You can break yourself in trying to experiment. You can break your bones in trying to experiment. And, you know, that's what you're trying to do. You know, we've tried to see ways in which you could integrate faster, you know, even if that costs us some money in the process. And that is one reason why we've not, you know, kind of done the growth as per, you know, just gone out, giving referral programs and, you know, got 1 lakh users. We've not done it. We've consciously not done it. One, because we need to understand what our costs are, right? Because, see, if our payment gateway takes 1.25%, how do we stop that 1.2% being taken away from the payment gateway? So now we started figuring out these things, like from when we were at the Global FinTech Festival, we were talking to the National Payment Council of India, and they said there is something called UPI plugins. There is, you actually work with a bank, and the bank gives you the APIs to actually, and you don't have such high, you know, transaction fees. You have, you know, very small API hit pieces, or which could even be per API, or you could just do it one time with the bank and it's over. So we started thinking, you know, how do we lower cost? And we're still in that, you know. We want to lower our cost. We want to become, you know, a company that's not burning cash and then, you know, kind of grow from there. So our ideology can be a little different to what other people are following. But I think this is a more fundamentally business. And prior to, you know, Fint, I was running a business. So now that kind of, you know, that's still stuck into me. Before spending some of this money, I actually thinks twice, and that kind of is important. So that is why we not you know, gold ETFs or mutual funds, which are more regulated. We wanted it to be easier for us to actually see the customer behavior, whether you are consumer facing app, and see it actually works for the consumers. And now that it's working, we can experiment with more things.
Let's talk a bit about you. What have you done that has gotten you to this point that, you know, you had this idea? Let's get a bit about Abadur, the person, before Fint came about. How did Abadur get to Fint? What was that journey like?
Okay, so this is a pretty different journey. I don't come from a sector of finance as well, you know. I would jokingly say that is the reason why I don't get investors on board right now. But I think primarily when I was in my first year of college, I started experiential marketing business, and I've worked with multiple multinational companies like Epson for Pan India activations of their brand. So, and this was the first year in my college when I was really engineering back in 2012. And I grew that company to probably do, you know, revenue with a very small team, upwards of 1 crore. And there were pretty high margins when you look at a service kind of a business, the margins are pretty high. So you know, then COVID came about, right? And we were a digital marketing agency. We were an experiential marketing agency. So we were more on ground, our demo activations and all of that. And then COVID hit us, right? And then COVID hit us, and then it kind of almost sank the boat, right? Then I kind of decided this was not my calling. I wanted to do something which is more larger than life, could reach out to more people, could be of some help to some people. Right. And that's kind of what motivated me to actually kind of go work in a startup. So I wanted to start a startup, but I did not, you know, think, you know, I have this star-spangling idea, let's start. No. I wanted to see how the world of tech startup works, because I was not in one of them. I was running a normal dhanda. I'm a businessman. Right. And I actually don't know whether how the founders get paid in a cash burning company. Right? I had no clue. I was paying myself with the profits that I was making. So I then joined TagMango, which is a creator economy startup, which is backed by YC. There is where I met my co-founder, Jatin. And we were working briefly on their, you know, on their financial mechanisms, you know, how the money comes into the account, how it moves out, how the refunds happen, all of that. And these are overnight discussions that me and Jatin did over a period of time. We thought, let's build something that's more value to a consumer. So we thought of building an application like FamPay, because FamPay was very new at that point of time. And we wanted to build something around FamPay, but a better version. Right? So we almost did our integration with Decentro. We were about to launch and we said, this is not going to work. This is going to be our deathbed. And we're going to die. Because no matter how good you show, as an entrepreneur, a businessman, whatever you want, when you're showing financial projections, you always want to show the best of financial projections. But that's not how the world works. So we thought, no, this is going to be our deathbed. So we kind of shifted from there and looked at options, you know, where we could reward users or give digital reward. And then we thought, this, okay, this is an easier path to kind of understanding user behavior. Let's go about this, right? And that's when we kind of, you know, started to build things from there. So the company was formed in 2021, right? And the revenue that you see is from July 2023. So number one is, you know, we've been very, I would say, you know, grounded to the fact that we want to build something and we want to build something. It's going to take some time. We know that it's going to take some time. And I have done a business. I've seen it sign down. And now that business is kind of handled by my younger brother. So it kind of works again. But, you know, that is about me. You can, if you want to, wish, ask any questions.
And I'll give you a little bit of context where we speak about failures. We've had people who have done upwards of 130 experiments and still not get anywhere. We've had people who've done 4 or 5 or 6 experiments. So what was your guys' number? What can you tell us one of your most interesting experiences / failures / experiments, whatever you want to term it?
There's this thing, right? There's an app for that. Everything is supported by, there's an app for that. And everybody wishes to build applications and platforms. The sheer number of applications there are, it feels like it must be so easy to build a platform. It must be so easy to build an application, right? That's what it feels like. So many apps, they're flooded. What is the experience? Yes, you have had an idea. Yes, I wish to reward my people, wish to reward the customer with digital gold. Building it is a whole other task. It's a whole other landscape that you need to think of. So what kind of conversations were you and your co-founder having, and what kind of failures did you face, and how did you launch it?
So we were pretty, you know, lucky to be kind of, you know, get 2 government grants, very small in numbers. And, you know, I would give it completely to my team. You know, these are a bunch of interns that actually kind of work like full-timers. Just to give you an insight, you know, on how difficult it is, you know, I think an idea is the easiest thing that you could do. Building it is a completely different ballgame altogether. It sounds so easy, you know, let's just build an app which does this and it's going to do this and it's going to happen. It's not as easy, you know. You see users kind of scamming you in ways you'd not imagine. And with financial instruments, it happens more, you know. Users try to take advantage of you, in terms of trying to find loopholes in you. And we've seen that a lot happen with us, you know. We've seen, you know, users kind of abuse the system in terms of getting rewards. Some of them, not all of them. But I think our biggest failure would be, you know, taking it. I wouldn't call anything a failure because I see everything you learn. So I still think, you know, our biggest failure is probably, you know, underestimating how difficult it would be. So we underestimated it. And it's a good thing as well. I think every entrepreneur, every startup should underestimate how difficult your journey is going to be. You know, when you're looking at the mountain, you're all excited to be on a top of the mountain, and you're underestimating, you know, how difficult that trek is going to be. And that is the reason primarily why you are on top of that summit, is because you've actually underestimated the summit, right? You've underestimated the trek. So we kind of underestimated how difficult it would be to kind of, you know, reach to a platform which is actually generating some revenue. And it kind of took us about a little less than 2 years to reach. But me and my co-founder have said, you know, this is what we're going to do. This is what makes us happy. And let's do it till we kind of die. So,
you know, there, I don't know who said this, but I remember there's like the ideas are around a dime a dozen. It is who executes the idea best. If ideas were at the premium, then only the first mover would have ever gotten any credit. Because, like, you know, you think of Facebook, not a first mover. You know, all of these platforms, it's about who has the best execution. At the end of the day, that's the separator. And coming to your mountain point, you know, you always have to envision yourself being at the top of the peak. But if you overestimate the climb, you might just scare yourself into not even going for the climb. So you have to underestimate it so that you can be like, yes, I can do this. And then when you're halfway off the mountain and you realize there's halfway to go and you thought that's going to be 80% of the way, you're like, up to aage, might as well just go all the way up.
Yeah, flying cars was an idea that was thrown around, God knows, 50,000 years ago when they were like, cars should start flying. Whoever had that idea should be the one who builds it, no? Hovercrafts, like, crazy.
Dude, think of those cartoons, yeah, the Jetsons and all, where the people teleporting, going up and down, we're suddenly living in space, everything is oxygenated, and, you know, ideas have been around for ages, man. Nuclear fusion has been around for 50, 60 years. No one's figured out a way to execute it properly yet. So, that's a gold mine.
I think execution is also key. I think that's part of, you know, the deal. I think that's 99% of why a startup kind of, you know, actually takes off. And it's purely based on execution and the kind of team that you have. And, you know, we've been very lucky to have such an amazing, talented team with us. Fairly young, very new team members, you know, basically working for just maybe, you know, they like the idea and they're working on it because they like the idea. You know, I personally hate to convince people to kind of work for me if they like the idea. But in a scenario where you're bootstrapped, you kind of have to also think, you know, is how. And since we don't pay ourselves, we are okay with it. If I would have been paying myself and I would have paid somebody lower, yeah, then it would have, you know, gone on to me on a different level altogether. And this one thing that we have done is we've kept the team completely remote. And I think that kind of works in our favor. It doesn't work for a lot of organizations, but it kind of works in our favor. There is no fixed standard times to work. There's task-based work that you have to do. And we're working as a team. And that kind of helped us, you know, get to where we are.
To Abadur's team, boss tarif kar raha yaar, leke bhago.
Repost.
Clip this up, put this everywhere.
I am actually lucky to have them. And it is because of them, is, you know, because the application is out, it's running, and, you know, mostly, big ups to them, you know.
Hip hip hooray to Abadur's team.
Maybe hooray. Maybe we can kind of grow and then they can be rewarded, you know, as the users are being rewarded.
100%, man.
So Abadur, one of the major problems that you face is that you are a two-sided business. You need a Zomato and you need a customer. Right? And let's continue to talk about execution, right? Let's go into the deeper side of this. First customer, first person who actually took the leap, because when Vishwath and I started this podcast, we had 5 views and a video. 4 of them were ours and 1 of them was like my mom's or somebody, right? And we approached Sakshi. And somehow she just said, yes, I will come on the podcast. So she was our first founder. We till date don't know why she came on and why she took the jump with us, right? So
shout out to Sakshi for being such a sport. I think we approached at least 5 or 7 founders before. And everyone was like, yeah, maybe in a month, maybe like give us 3 weeks. Sakshi, we spoke to her. Yeah, let's do tomorrow.
So like first customer on either side. Let's talk about your first Zomato, first business, and let's talk about your first person who actually trusted you enough to buy from you, because you were asking a lot. You were asking them to trust with your money, you know, so it's a lot.
So for the business side, you know, it's a little more easier for me because, you know, I've been in the businesses and, you know, I actually know how to be a little aggressive in terms of, you know, collaborating with the business. So when we were collaborating with, you know, Quicksilver is actually a brand that kind of, the multiple brands that give out gift cards, right? Because they have integrations of all other brands. So we when we went to them, right, they're like, you know, you have to give us upfront fees, this much. And me being the Banya I am, I've grown up with a lot of Marwari friends, and, you know, thanks to them, I kind of have that, you know, in me to, you know, kind of bargain for everything. So I went to him and said, you're a bootstrap company. We can't give you anything. Maximum that we can give you is customers. And this is the projection that we're looking at. Yearly, you can go about 10 lakhs. This is what we can look at. And then, you know, they came down. I stuck my ground. We eventually did the integration without a cost to us, right? So integrations with businesses is a little easier because, you know, you are promising them future value, right? That customers will come on board and you will have a future value. So at they understand more, so they're able to, you know, kind of, okay, go ahead, let's do it. Even if it doesn't work out, it's just another client for from the rest of workout. If it works out, it's going to be revenue generation, good revenue generation. So businesses were easier. Customers, you know, initially we kind of wanted to launch with teenagers. So teenagers were really excited that something was coming for them. And, you know, so you have these small teenage YouTube channels. So these kids went on YouTube and they started shooting videos that a new application is coming in and all of that. So we actually had a pretty, you know, we didn't pay for doing this. We just figured out, you know, these teen groups in Telegram and WhatsApp. And we kind of messaged them, you know, we are co-founders. So probably I just tell you from a perspective, you know, I am in my 30s now. So talking to teens, you know, they're excited. They feel this is going to easily be built. It's a difficult conversation. But, you know, we had that conversation with teenagers, you know, with fun. We enjoyed it. We had it around them. They kind of were very excited. They went and, you know, told their friends. And that's how the first initial users started coming in, right? In fact, we didn't have to kind of bug really hard. We just tapped into, you know, we thought, you know, this is a customer segment that might get excited. Let's just go talk to them. Right. And then they started, you know, and you have this, when you are a teen and you're 17, 18, and you have the co-founder of an application talk to you, you're already on the move. So you are going to tell your friends, then, you know, this is an application that is coming out and I've actually talked to the person who's building it. So we thought, you know, this is a good starting point to create some smaller little hype where people start, you know, come start using the application.
Bahadur, in fact, a very interesting point that you brought up is how you appeal to teens. I think what y'all are offering kind of allows parents in a way to monitor where their child is spending the money. You know, you prepay a certain pocket money's worth of a gift card and you keep it on the thing, and then you are aware ki, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 places.
So that is what FamPay is. But that the problem with prepaid cards is prepaid cards are almost dead in. So if you have an instrument like UPI, right, then everything else kind of starts looking at, you know, the person who is being paid money is receiving money instantly. So everything else starts to look, you know, okay, I'm decent. You know, the instant mechanism of UPI is something people will want. You know, so I want the money right now. Even if it's, you know, one of the come 2 days, even if I know the credit card money is going to come 2 days later, I still want it today. But that's kind of made it so difficult for cards to be, you know, a way of making payments.
One more thing you mentioned, I remember when we met as well, that today the government is giving startups grants that they don't even know about or they can avail. Can you tell us more about those? What are those? And you said you guys use them as well. So what are those?
Yeah, so we got two of them. So one was from Step PET Patiala. My co-founder was still in college when he was starting this. So he approached his incubation center in college and then they said, pitch us. And both of these grants have been picked up when we did not have a revenue, when we just had a vision and we had just some bits of the application. One we got from Step PET, and the other we got from iCreate, which is an incubation center set up by Uday Kotak in Gujarat. So we pitched to both of them, right? The incubation centers. So basically, the government gives the incubation centers their grants. The incubation centers have to release those grants. Right? The government cannot give you the grants directly. So you can, entrepreneurs can go talk to incubation centers. And you know, incubation centers give grants easily to startups that are in the healthcare systems, that are working in agri-tech, that are working in new technology, that's agriculture, animal husbandry, mental health, healthcare, all of this. And we were a fintech startup, and we still were getting these grants. So there are grants that the government is willing to give you. Now we've applied for the Startup Industry Seed Fund, which is another 40 years. So and you have to present, you have to show them what you can do, how this can shape the future, and you know, what are the things that you can do, you know, to, you know, increase more awareness in the society, and you know, be of help to the society. You don't have to primarily be, to get this government grants, you don't have to primarily be a company that's making money. No, you have to be a company that's kind of creating some sort of change. Go ahead, Akhil.
Love this transition. So, what can you get? How much money can you get today in order to get to your next milestone and then the next one? What does the future look like? What would you do with the money? So many questions, Abadur, like, let's go.
So the future is, you know, we've built this as a bootstrap company. We are looking at raising about 2 crore INR, which is a very small amount. We're primarily doing it to build more systems, to, you know, make this rewarding mechanism more easier, more sustainable. You know, we are looking at creating a reward mechanism that never stops. So we are from that mindset where if we are giving it today, we are not giving it for the user to come on board. We are giving it because the user needs it and the user wants it, right? And the user should have it because the user it has is get, users of credit cards are getting these, right? But let's find out alternative mechanisms to get other users who don't have credit or, you know, other limit payment mechanisms which are rewarding them and give them rewards which they're doing on UPI. So now, to make this more efficient, right, we have to build a product that is integrated with UPI or plugins, right? So we don't have any costs to payments being made to us, right? We don't have infrastructure costs, any APIs hit us. So if we kind of lower the costs to us every time, we can keep rewarding the users continuously over a period of time, right? And we can talk to brands. Let's, you know, we always thought, you know, we did a crazy amount with Amazon. So much so that I was on a call with Amazon today telling them, I want to do a direct partnership with you because I want to understand, you know, what are the loopholes and how can we make it better? You know, what can work in your favor with these consumers? And what, how can, if I am an intermediary, I should be thinking like, I should be thinking, how do I make myself survive in the future? If one of these aspects moves away, I am not going to be there. But if I work closely with the brand that is issuing the gift card, right? If they say that this is not going to work out, they're going to give us an alternative to what we can do, right? And that is why we're looking at, you know, raising funds in order to build a product that is robust and not, you know, downloads. We've always, you know, thought download is a vanity metric. I can get a 1 lakh downloads with a referral program right away in 30 days. Like, that's very easy to do. What people don't understand is downloads are pretty easy to do. What is not easy to do is an engaging application where people are coming back in again and again to do. And that's what we're trying to understand. You know, that's why you don't want to, you know, rush into a growth period and, you know, say, let's raise so much funds. Because, you know, we are growing at such pace. That is primarily what makes you a startup whose bubble can burst. If a startup has values which are deep-rooted in understanding how customers are going to come, how I can lower costs, and how I can keep this going, right? How can the flame still be alive over a period of 10 years is the question that we want to ask. And that these are questions we ask.
Bahadur, Vishrod and I envision a future where, you know, how you're an incredible founder and you have your co-founder and you have your team. We envision a future where Vishrod and I have a lot of founders who are on board with our project, which is Thought Bistro. and we get the opportunity to connect founders and businesses with each other and generate value. I would like to ask you, what would be two kinds of businesses who we could connect to you tomorrow, irrespective of our current portfolio, two kinds of businesses who could really generate value for you? What would they be?
Two that could generate value for you and two that you could generate value for.
That's a tough question, you know, because on top of my head, because it's a consumer-facing application, you know, we could look at developing employee benefit schemes in and around, you know, gift carding, rewarding mechanisms. So any business, we can create value for them. If they're a big business and they're rewarding their employees in any which case. So we can create some. Because even if you look at how Oracle rewards employees. So basically Oracle tells them, if you achieve this, you're going to get gift cards. And somebody is actually providing that gift, right? Or that rewards mechanism, their employee benefit. So we can create value for any business who wants to create an employee benefit sort of a scheme. And we're looking at, this is also in our, you know, vision that we are creating, you know, how can we move to B2B and give out to, you know, as employee benefits and all of that. Two businesses that can create value for me, you know, any business that can integrate me for free can create value to me. So I am looking at a free integration. So anybody who can give me maybe 1,000 rupees of revenue, right? But isn't a cost to me. I am full growth. You know, we went to National Payment Council of India and said, we want to integrate Bharat Bill Pay system, basically mobile bill application, the mobile payments, right? And all of that in our system. But other companies are asking us for a, you know, one-time charge. They said, no, it's going to happen for free. And, you know, I am always looking, and I always tell people, look out for people who can integrate with free for you. So you can experiment. It might not work out, but it's not a cost to you. It's time as a cost, right? So you have to weigh whether you should do it or not, because time is still a cost. So if you're half-heartedly thinking it might work, you might as well try it, and you might see it's not working. It's okay. I mean, let's just try it. The worst case scenario is we're going to fail. As a startup, it's continuously failing. It's that one moment where it kind of, you know, is that clicks is when a startup kind of takes off. And, you know, it is that one defining moment for a startup. But to get to that one defining moment, you have to make, you know, these multiple jumps along leaps of faith. I think any business can create value for me. And I can create value for business if we have an employee reward benefit mechanism that we can build for them.
How do I get value from integrating you for free in my system?
So let's say, for example, you have a section which talks about financial knowledge, or you're talking to financial content creators, or you're talking to financial people who are building in the finance sector. And I said, give me these podcasts, I'll put them up on my application for people to view them, right? That's value added to the person who's actually viewing them. And that's value added to you as well, right? So there is nothing that cannot be done. It's how you work about and how you want to extract that value. It's actually, value is all about extraction. If you have a bunch of things and you can't extract them, it's like a cup of coffee. If you can't extract a good cup of coffee, you can't do. Even the best beans don't have any value if you can't extract a great cup of coffee out.
So we're going to be bringing this to a close. Thank you so much for talking to us. Thank you so much for telling us about all the fun stuff that you're doing, all the stuff that is, you know, a little over my head, but it sounds like a very interesting concept. I never thought about credit cards and UPI and how UPI and credit cards can actually affect each other in such a way. So we have this tradition on our podcast where the previous founder has left a question for you, and you have to answer that question and leave another question for the next founder. The question for you is, how important is grit in your life, and how has it helped bring you here?
I think grit is in those one of the top three things that I would rate, you know, to have in a founder. And grit is one thing that kind of helps you overcome all the failures that you see. And to be honest, I've seen a ton of them. And I think you know, we think life is happy and sufferings happen, right? It's actually the other way around. Sufferings happen and you start to find happiness in it, as the teachings of Buddhism. So I think grit is primarily very important because, you know, you are always in that midst of chaos. And that belief that, you know, that you can come out of it, you can reach out, you can probably, you know, shoot to the stars. That belief in yourself is what kind of drives you and has driven me. You know, I have done things in my life not thinking, oh, what are the repercussions of this, or, you know, what's going to happen tomorrow. And the only things that make you do it is self-intuition and the grit that you have. So I would say that it has worked in my favor. It's one of those top three things that I would want any founder to have. Or I would say any human being to have, you know, the grit to do something, or, you know, just plainly not give up. And plainly not giving up, or, you know, tackling failures is what kind of makes you a true founder, if you want to say, or a true human being. I think everybody is a founder. You know, they're finding things in life. You know, we say that a person who has found a business is a founder. I think it implies so much more than, you know, just businesses. And grit for an overall human being is so much, you know, not for a founder, for anybody out there who thinks, you know, kind of is bogged down and, you know, is filled with failure, and life is filled with failure. And I kind of agree to it because five times in a day, three times we're failing. So, out of five things that are happening in your day, three of them or four of them are continuous failures, and one of them might work in you.
Can we get your question now?